Welcome to Fuller Butts, a behind-the-scenes plastic surgery podcast. Yes, you heard that right. Join your co-hosts, Dr. Sam Fuller and Dr. Dan Butts, board-certified plastic and reconstructive surgeons, on an exclusive full-access pass into the world of plastic surgery. Combining their expertise and training, Drs. Fuller and Butts will share medical insights, detailed explanations, and lighthearted humor to keep you entertained and informed. We're certain you'll become passionate about the plastic surgery specialty, and between debunking myths, uncovering truths, or just making you laugh out loud at their perspective on this creative and artistic field, we've got something for everyone. From tummy tucks to Botox and mommy makeovers to surgery do-overs, the Fuller Butts podcast will surely satisfy your podcast fix. All right, now let's dive into this episode.
Hey there, it's Dr. Butts here with the Butts and Fuller Butts behind the scene look at plastic surgery. My co-host, Dr. Samuel Fuller, or just Sam, sorry. I always mess that up.
Full name is just Sam.
I know.
My parents love the name Sam very strong.
It's a great name. There's no need for the Yule.
Samuel. Yeah, so Sam Fuller.
I know. I always
mess that up.
How are you doing? What's new?
Doing good. Feeling strong, refreshed, ready to rock
and roll. Peloton today?
Did a run. Did a short little run. Weather's picking up. Things are looking bright. Ready to get over the haziness that is the Midwest.
Yeah, we need some sunshine. Let's see, we're talking about breast lifts, internal bra meshes. What are you thinking?
Last week, or our last podcast, we discussed tummy tucks, and we were both advocates of a drainless tummy tuck, and just gave a rundown of what that means, and then we talked about just combined surgeries and other add-ons that you do at the same time as a tummy tuck. And both mentioned that the breast surgery really goes hand in hand just to, complete the transformation, whether it's from weight loss, whether it's a mommy makeover after the kids have just destroyed their bodies and they finally want to get back to what they're, really envision their bodies to be. And so that's where, the breast surgery, which I think is fairly complex just because it's a three-dimensional structure. There's a lot of moving parts with muscle, with skin, with fat, with, larger nipples that need to be reduced, with ptosis and, other factors. So to me, there's some nuance to it. And I'd love for us to spend, this podcast just diving into some of the tips and tricks and understanding a little bit more about what patients may benefit from one versus the other as far as mastopexy or lift without, or mastopexy with augmentation.
Yeah, sometimes when I'm kind of like trying to simplify it during the consult, I'm like, if you look at yourself in a sports bra and you're like, I'm too big, then you probably want a reduction. Too small, you probably want implants. If you like your volume, but just when you take the bra off, they're too low, then a lift to help improve the shape. That's obviously very simplistic, but kind of helps just start to guide the patient into where they might be going before we do the exam.
You tell your patients that with a lift, they're going to be the same size.
I often tell them that people most of the time do go down like a half cup size or a little bit. I think it's, again, we talked about bra sizes before. I mean, it's so hard. Most patients aren't wearing the right bra to begin with. Oftentimes they're wearing a bigger bra to kind of, hold things up. So we're not typically removing any breast tissue, just the loose skin. So that's what I tell them. It might change the bra a little bit, but what about you? Do you see big change?
I always tell them that it's going to be smaller inherently because we are removing stuff. So we're removing skin, which doesn't seem like it's that much, but then they're
also weighed it. It's like 20 grams.
But when you remove the stuff and then you sew it back on, it is going to feel and seem smaller because instead of it just being elongated and stretched out over a larger surface area, things are going to be more tightly packed and pulled up. And so to me, that always just seems to be smaller than what you would envision. And the other thing that I say, just to try to really set expectations, is that, if they're expecting me to defy gravity with just a lift by pulling things up and providing that upper pole fullness to make them look voluminous in the upper portion of the breast. But that's really going to be hard to achieve with just a mastopexy alone. And even a smaller sized implant is really the only way to fill out that pocket that's there. And I would say even fat grafting, I just cannot guarantee that that's going to give that great teardrop shape to the breast. There are certain patients, you know, with skin quality and, you know, different variables and stuff where, you know, of course it's all patient driven, but those are some of the big factors that I'm talking about as far as mastopexy alone, as far as restoring upper pole fullness. And then just, I cannot say, there's no way that's going to be bigger. And I would say they're seemingly going to be smaller just because we're taking something that's stretched out and making it more confined.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, upper pole fullness is kind of like the, obviously what everyone wants and what's really hard to achieve without implants. And I agree, fat grafting, you can't just put it all up top. You have to kind of put it a little bit everywhere. Tends to, you know, it's soft and fluffy, doesn't really give you that structure that an implant provides. I have found, you know, I use a lot of meshes with my lifts and reductions now. I probably, you know, over 50% of them. It does help kind of just limit how much, you know, general stretch you get afterwards, which is, you know, I think maybe you see this, like right after surgery, they're high, tight, perky, everyone loves them, they're swollen, and the swelling goes away, they just settle a little bit, not back to where they started, just enough that they, you know, wish they had that fullness. And the mesh doesn't necessarily give you an implant look, but provides a little bit more support long term.
Yeah, I try to perform like an internal mesh with suture, so I'll tack it up probably a little bit more aggressively just to try to simulate that and try to keep it up to where it is with the hope that it scars down and heals. Because yeah, that's the big issue with the mastopexy is that it looks great, fills out, and then I would say for a few weeks looks a bit wider than it should just with post-op swelling, and then it ends up, you know, dropping and fluffing and regains that teardrop shape that patients are happy with. When you're talking about mesh, just for our listeners that have no idea what we're talking about, like what are you talking about? You're adding mesh. What are you doing?
There's a number of different like dissolvable meshes that are now available for soft tissue support. They fully go away. They're made out of the same materials as their sutures are. I use three different brands depending on the situation. And they just, you know, you put them in like a bra, essentially, kind of a similar shape, a little bit smaller, I suppose, suture them down to kind of create this hammock-like bra, and they resist stretch early on. Well, then they dissolve and create scar tissue that's stronger than your native scar tissue. So I use them a lot for implants, using more and more for lifts and reductions and, you know, talking about the pros and cons.
You know, you talked about your kind of cool new trick that you're doing as far as mesh or internal bra. Maybe it's not new, something that we were incorporating with our practice. One entity that or item that I've found recent satisfaction with is the Bridget device, which is a device that aids with skin closure. One problem that I have, and I think many plastic surgeons do, and if they don't, they're either lying to you or they found the holy grail, is just the healing that can occur at a T point of skin. And so where the vertical incision that typically is like the lollipop incision around the nipple going down and then the transverse that's well hidden in the fold, just having that area heal up without issue. And so I've recently incorporated this Bridget medical device that really keeps the pressure off of the skin. It allows it to really recruit the surrounding tissues without all the adhesive and tape that poor healing skin do not like. It gets macerated, it gets wet, it gets angry, inflamed. And then I'm trying to decide whether it's the prep, it's the adhesive, it's the healing that's happening at this small little corner that can frustrate plastic surgeons. So the Bridget has been cool and a great and welcomed new participant in my practice. How do you combat some of the healing, or what do you tell your patients about the T incision?
Yeah, I mean, that is definitely the most common issue we run into is a little T junction irritation. I mean, I've definitely seen the Bridget. I think it's pretty interesting. I'm curious to hear, you know, about your experience when you those long-term outcomes. I don't know if you have them yet. Yeah, I mean, I just kind of use this, like, you know, the very final thing. I'll put a couple of these really tiny sutures in the surface that seems as if it's perfectly approximated. It's really decreased the risk of it. I mean, they still can happen. Nothing's, you know, nothing's perfect, unfortunately, in science and medicine. But I've had a much fewer of those with just adding, you know, the sutures. And I just use glue and tape. I've tried some of this other, some other newer tapes out there that don't have adhesives. It's like silicone and silk tape. That was pretty cool, but a lot of this stuff gets really expensive, and all these surgeries, you know, we want to do, make sure we're being, you know, I definitely don't cheap out on, I think, what's really safety important things, but not spending money on things that aren't quite as beneficial.
I think as plastic surgeons, you know, you and I have both talked about some investment in patient outcomes and satisfaction. And, you know, for you, I think it's using more of the mesh or the internal bra for these cases. And, you know, that's an investment that you feel is worth it. And for me, whether it's extra stitches or just the dressing application, we're constantly trying to just make things better, because it's, you know, happy patient and makes a happy doctor. And if we're, you know, having long-term outcomes that are reliable and skin healing, that's reproducible. That's certainly something that we're trying to, you know, come out with a win. I have patients who ask, you know, about reducing the nipple size, which can become stretched out with breastfeeding, with weight gain, with weight loss, with drooping or ptosis of the breasts. But they don't understand like how we do it or why we do it or what size we do. Like, what do they, how do we, like, I had a husband, you know, a patient used to be like, how did you make the nipple so perfect? And so I had to divulge our secret, but, you know, how would you answer that question?
Do they laugh at you when you mention a cookie cutter?
Oh yeah.
I was like, yeah, we have these cookie cutters. And they're like, what? we have these perfect circular devices that are marking devices, different sizes. Typically I'll use 38 to 42, depending on the individual. There are 45s and bigger ones available and smaller too. That marks the inner new marking, and then use different circles for the outer ones. Do you have a size preference, or does it depend?
I'm kind of like a 38, 40, and 42, I would say, are my sizes. I think I can't quote it, but there was a study that showed that the ideal, like, female nipple areolar size was around 40 millimeters. So I try to stick to that. And it just depends on size.
I think it depends on breast size and patient size. Smaller breasts, smaller areolas makes sense.
Yeah, my OR staff, the first time I asked for the cookie cutter, were like, what are you talking about? And so I know that now sounds weird after speaking to multiple people. So I try to say, like, we have a nipple sizer and try to keep the cookies out of it. You know, we've talked a lot about breast lifts, and, you know, we just want to come full circle and talk about, you know, lifts with augmentation. So that means adding an implant as well as the lift. And, you know, Dr. Butts, when you're doing that procedure, what do you do first? Like, are you pulling it all up and then sticking an implant in? Are you putting the implant in first and then tying things together? Like, how does that work? Like, how does that actually come to be?
Yeah, so, you know, augmentation mastopexies years ago were often done separate because they're kind of competing forces, that you're adding volume, stretching the skin, then you're tightening the skin. So I like to, you know, over the last few decades, it's been shown to be very safe to do it together, but put the implant in that fills out a certain amount of volume and then tighten up the skin to kind of match that implant size that we chose, you know, the patient chose. I found that to be very successful. What about you?
Yeah, the same way. And I have mentioned it to some patients routinely about that this used to be a two-stage process where you either, you know, do one then the other and pull it up, because that just, to me, puts it into words how complex this is with the two differing types of processes of pulling things together and then, you know, stretching it out. And, you know, as plastic surgeons, we learned some of the commandments of plastic surgery. And one of them is that plastic surgery is the constant battle between beauty and blood supply. And I think that's exactly what a breast mastopexy with augmentation is. So I make a small incision and then from memory fold, which is very safe, great exposure, place the implant in underneath the muscle, especially if I'm doing a lift, just to preserve blood supply, just to keep things attached and safe. I'll close that pocket. And then, you know, I tell my staff, like, I never want to see that implant ever again. I want to close it and make it watertight. then sit them up, and then I'll usually tailor tack and do some pinch tests to see how much skin we have, taking into account the nipple areolar complex to see if that can be downsized to the goal that we have. And then I'm excising, doing a skin only lift traditionally, and then pulling things together, closing it up, putting some Bridget devices over that T to help it heal. I don't use drains. Do you use drains for this procedure?
Nope. Yeah, no drains for breast surgeries unless, yeah.
And recovery, like what are you telling your patients they can do in for the first week? What are you telling them they can resume full activity?
Yeah, normally my general protocol is, you know, 2 weeks, no heavy lifting, 6 weeks exercise for pretty much everything. And then I kind of, you know, say it's going to be tummy tuck's a little bit more intense up front. Breast dog pexies, you're a little sore, but normally it's not too bad. Avoid big arm stuff. It's stretching on things. Just do things slower than you normally would. Then with implants, you know, underneath the muscle, I like to try to avoid pec exercises for at least the first 3 months.
Do you have any patients after breast augmentation where they are restricted from doing certain activities ever again?
No. No.
Some point, if you have a breast implant, can you drink alcohol?
Yes. You are able to drink alcohol. Ideally, not too much before surgery. I can thin the blood a little bit.
Can you give some circumstance to that? Why did I ask you that question?
I had a patient recently who was really concerned. She's like, well, if I get implants, I can't drink alcohol. She read this somewhere on the internet. And so, yeah, I mean, we obviously answered her question and reassured her.
Yeah. So one of the key tips and tricks to another problem that I treat, which is tennis elbow or lateral epicondylitis, which is pain on the outside of the elbow. I was telling patients that they should essentially be like a T-Rex, kind of arms at their sides, using things more for flexors, and just anything that you're doing with your arm pulled out is trouble. And I actually say that same thing for my breast aug and breast aug pexy patients, where you basically just want to keep your arms at your sides, be a T-Rex, just everything's nice and gentle, small, you're not overreaching for anything. I give an example of a patient who was trying to put on fitted mattress sheets aggressively, like in the first week after their augmentation, and had some of the incision open up slightly. They turned out great, no issues whatsoever. But I just always bring that up as an example. Like, you don't want to be putting on fitted mattress sheets, pulling down. You know, that is not something you want to do immediately afterwards in that first week period. And then it gets safer and safer as you get further out. I just, you know, I'm very much in line with doing safe surgeries and safe recoveries as you are. And so I just don't want to take any chances. I always tell them this is an investment in their bodies, you know, their quality of life, their beauty. You don't want to second chance it or risk it. And then we're kicking ourselves because we're dealing with something. So 6 weeks goes by quickly. Patients are well versed on the recommendations and education for that.
Yeah, and I, you know, like you said, it's an investment. I always like, you know, want to invest in the recovery too. We only have so much control during that 1-2 hour surgery, whatever it is. We need them to kind of be a part of that recovery process to get the best outcome and minimize the risk of recovery.
So what about scar care for a breast lift? What are you telling them that they should do, and when can they start that? And again, when we're talking about a breast lift, I'm imagining an incision around the nipple going down towards the fold, and then some varying degree of some transverse or horizontal scar that's hidden in that breast fold.
Yeah. I mean, scar therapy is like a whole thing, right? Normally I have tape on for about 3 weeks. We take it off, and then we do an antibiotic ointment for 2 to 3 days. I don't like to do it longer than that because sometimes it can create a rash. Then I do Aquaphor for another week or so, just keep it really hydrated, and then transition over to silicone scar gel. There's scar tapes. You can use broadband lights. You know, most of the time, the Aquaphor silicone tape is adequate, and they, you know, get a little red and then kind of fade away pretty quickly. And, you know, the first, you know, year or so, it just takes time. What about you? You have a...
I usually leave my surgical dressing on for 3 weeks, and that's usually the Bridget on the vertical, and then I use a 1-inch Steri-Strip around the inframammary fold incision. Usually when I'm pulling that off, I'm letting them just let it air out, let it breathe for a week or so, and usually at 4 weeks, somewhere between 4 to 6 weeks, I encourage them to purchase and have on hand and ready silicone gel for the nipple itself, and then silicone gel sheet or tape that goes on the longer incisions. And I encourage them to read the labels because...
Let it breathe. You let them let it breathe? It's like a grandmother's thing. Aquaphor on there.
I let it air out. I just don't like macerated issues.
That's why you need Aquaphor. No, you should do Aquaphor.
The skin in the bra, it's underneath there. I mean, it's between the adhesive and the prep.
That's why you need Aquaphor. It protects it. Not water.
I feel like that's one of the weakest points of the skin healing is at that time period, and doing anything that's going to cause that to open up. I don't really have issues at that time. It's, early on, but to me, I'm not going to rock the boat. I take your recommendations and so forth, but I'll have them read the label for the silicone gel sheet because that's important. I've had issues with that. Some people put it on and just leave it on 24 hours and then just go days with it. And it's really important to build up the skin's tolerance of the silicone. Usually the box label will say wear it for 4 hours for 2 or 3 days, and then you boost it up to 8 hours a day and then 12 hours a day before you're wearing it continuously. Because I have had patients with reactions to the silicone. It gets beet red, the dissolvable stitches, which are below the skin, start to erupt or come, to the superficial area. And then we're chasing our tail a little bit with that. So to me, that's a key point.
There's a lot of ways to.
Are you funded by Aquaphor? I'm trying to understand that.
So good.
Well, great. And then the last question, I think we should wrap it up because this has been a great talk. And again, these are huge topics. We're going to have tons of podcasts about them. But just a quick one, because I would imagine that our viewers or potential patients who are interested in this may wonder, like, how do you choose a size of an implant when you're doing a lift and an augmentation? Like, how do you incorporate like the breast tissue that's there versus what is, not there versus, all of those.
Yeah, I do it the same way as if we're not doing a lift. I mean, so we're not taking any of that away. It's just the skin. So I do same measurements, use sizers, 3D, Crystallix imaging to help kind of choose that size and try in those sizes and see what volume they like. So I don't really
Does the Crystallix incorporate a lift?
Yep. They can do lifts on there. It's when they're really big lifts, the computer program gets a little confused about where the fold is, but it's still useful. You can kind of simulate that a little bit. Do you change things? Do you do it? Do you add more volume or less?
No, I don't. It's their anatomy is their anatomy. So it's really based on their base width. And then I would just have to incorporate, how much breast tissue they have and how big they really want to be to help determine like what their goals are. Some patients who are deflated have no breast tissue. And we're seeing this a lot more with the weight loss patients from Ozempic, Skinny Shots, things like that. To me, that's challenging because their tissues are so elastic. They've lost so much weight and you're trying to rebuild all of this and then pull up all of the skin elasticity and try to incorporate how elastic and stretched their skin is versus pulling things too tight and risking healing. That's one spectrum. And then the other spectrum is patients who still have decent amount of breast tissue who need a lift, but also want that upper pole fullness. To me, it's, just incorporating what their size goals are with the sizers that we've talked about on the Breast Aug podcast and keeping it simple. I don't really do high projection implants for this type of procedure. I think a moderate is very appropriate to get the upper pole fullness if that's what the goal is for.
I tend to prefer moderates and even low pluses when we're doing a lift. And if they're really deflated though, and they want a lot of volume, then they might need a high profile. Mm-hmm. But I agree. It's if they have that, volume, you're putting the sizer on top of their volume. So that takes into consideration that when you're sizing.
Awesome.
But yeah, I really like mesh for massive weight loss patient breast augs. I think their skin's stretchy, everything's stretchy. That mesh really helps support things. That should be another topic, just meshes.
We should talk about meshes and then maybe internal bra suturing supports, but maybe not into so much detail that we're giving away our trade secrets sort of thing. Or should we do that? another great talk. I appreciate everyone's time and listeners. Subscribe and please provide us with feedback, topics, suggestions, things that we'd love to talk about. I'd love to talk in part next week about our staff, our team, what patients will experience and who they will see as part of their plastic surgery journey from the office to the OR. So we'll talk about that. I think we'll continue to debunk some myths about plastic surgery in general. And then Dr. Butts, any other key things you want to talk about at the next podcast?
Sounds like a great one. Yeah. And it's more than just us. It takes teamwork to get all this stuff done. So you meet a lot of people when you come through, a lot of people help out.
For sure. Teamwork makes the dream work.
That's right.
At Fuller Butts, behind the scenes plastic surgery. And with that, we'll be signing off.
Have a good one.
All right. See you, man.
Thanks so much for tuning into this week's episode of Fuller Butts, a behind-the-scenes plastic surgery podcast. Doctors Fuller and Butts are so appreciative of your time and attention. We invite you to subscribe, share, and continue to enjoy our plastic surgery perspective. Feel free to reach out on Instagram at either sfullersurgerymd or at danielbuttsmd, that's Butts with a Z, for comments, suggestions, and support. Remember, be artsy, stay scientific, and make life fun. We hope you'll join us again on the next episode of Fuller Butts.